And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Bob M. from La Mesa.
Do not touch Mike.
Hi, I'm Bob Moore. I'm an alcoholic.
It's good to see all of my many friends here. There are two important people here for me tonight. The first important person is the lady of my life, this lovely gray-haired lady sitting right here. And silver-haired. Hi, all. Well, good night. The next person is sitting right over here, and Jerry, stand up. Jerry is my sponsor. I'm really delighted to be here. It's really a privilege for me, and I think it's important for you to know that this meeting got started, the genesis of it started on a Monday night at the central office. The fellow I do the phones with on Monday night, every other Monday night, he and I got kicking around the idea that it might be possible to have a speakers meeting within this area. It would be great. And we had some connection with the church, and the church was approached, and they approved it. They said, yes, they would like to have a meeting here. So we held a meeting on a Saturday night, and 39 people showed up. And that was I'm not going to say the founders meeting. I want to say it was a great 12-step meeting, because those people who participated that was a great 12-step meeting. 39 of us met, and before the night was over, we had all the service positions filled, and we passed the basket, the seventh tradition, and we came close to having $400 start money. So that's how it got going, and that's why you're here tonight. And we're glad that you're here. On behalf of all those people that were there that night, thank you for applauding them. Let me say welcome to those of you who are here as newcomers. I know it's scary. I know I was scared when I walked into my first meeting. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what they were going to ask of me, and I was a frightened guy. But I hung around, and I'm here tonight. And to those of you who celebrated your birthdays, congratulations. It's always great to see people advance in this fellowship or in periods of sobriety. Lisa, you were tremendous. You were tremendous. Well, I'll tell you right off the bat, I didn't get everybody popping too much popcorn. I got here, and hold your breath, I got here in 1947. And I wish I could tell you that I've been sober for that period of time. That would be 60 years. I've been in this fellowship for 60 years, and I had 9 bad months. So, thank God I made it back here. Well, I came from Minneapolis, Minnesota on a geographical tour. I was a young man, and fortunately I got involved with two young fellows that inherited a bunch of money, and we started a business. And we were doing quite well. And I went to a special meeting, and I woke up 4 days later in Northfield, Minnesota, and that was the first time I ever blacked out. And I went back and I told these guys that I was in business with, well, that ended that, but I told them I didn't know what happened to me. And I lied, of course, and I said, a bunch of crap. And they said there's a clause in our contract that you haven't read, obviously. And it was regards to my behavior, and that ended that business adventure. So I was broke, had nowhere to go, and I was kind of persona non grata in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So My fiance at the time loaned me $100, and I caught a Greyhound bus, and I came west. And the farther west I came, the better I liked it. And when I arrived in San Diego, I thought I had died and gone to heaven. I saw my first poinsettias in Laguna Beach, where we made a coffee stop. So it's been quite an event for me. I was having a real problem with alcohol, and that's nothing new to any of you, I know. And I didn't know it. I really didn't know it. I didn't know why I couldn't ingest alcohol and behave like other people, the people that I ran with. Every time that I ingested alcohol, something happened. I've been a fortunate guy. I've never been arrested. I've never been incarcerated. But I've had a hell of a lot of other miseries. So, I wasn't aware of what happened to me, but it started to be more frequent. And I married, of course, and I would go into a bar and I'd say, well, this is the drink. I'm having one drink tonight, and that's it. And I'm out of here. Well, most of you know that story and heard it 100 times. I never got out of that bar. And I would wake up in strange people with strange people and didn't know how the hell it all happened. And then, when I'd come to my senses, I'd have to return home and I'd have to, you know, walk in and sneak in and say that I'm sorry. I don't know how many times I said that. And finally, this lovely lady that I was married to for 54 years, in the sixth year of our marriage, she said to me, Bob, I've had it with you. I'm through. I can't take any more. And she said, I've made arrangements to take the children, and I'm leaving you because you're not doing anything for yourself. And I said, you can't do this. Geez, we have a fairly nice home. I have a job. We go to church regularly. We have all the things in life that a family needs. And she said, everything but you. We don't have you as a father. You're not a father person. You're not setting an example. And I don't want the children to be to go through what I've been going through with you. I'm tired of sitting up at night calling the friends that you know, having them go out and try to find you in the jail or in the morgue or in the hospital. And if they'd have looked in some cutie's house, they'd have probably found me. But that's the way it went. That was life on the other side. So I wasn't ready to accept that. I was still in that state of denial that we're all in, Gideon, at least myself. And a shipmate of mine, I was in the Navy for 4 years during WW2, and a shipmate of mine, I don't know how he got a hold of me, he called me and he said, we're having kind of a reunion over in Coronado, and we'd like to have you come over. Well, I went over, and that was a mistake, because I didn't come home for 3 days. And I don't know what the hell we did in those 3 days, but that was a fatal blow. So on that, I was a meat cutter by trade, and I was running a meat market down on Alcorn Boulevard and 33rd Street, an old Piggly Wiggly market. And I had just come off this horrible drunk, and I didn't know whether or not I wanted to eat my lunch or drink my lunch. You know, I was flipping the coin. And I decided I ought to eat something. So I went to this nearby drugstore that had a lunch counter, and I'm standing there and waiting for a place to sit down, and I'm hungover, and I'm still thinking about going over to the beer joint and have a beer instead of eating. And somebody tapped me on the shoulder, and I turned around, and I saw a guy that I hadn't seen for a number of years. And he and I grew up together in Minneapolis. We had the same trade, And we hung out in the same beer joints in the same ballrooms and chased a lot of women, and we had a hell of a time. And I looked at this guy and I couldn't believe it. Here he was. He had a nice white shirt. He had a tie, nice clean slacks, and he looked great. And I thought, Jesus, he really looks great. And he just said, I said, how are you, Bob? And he said, I'm terrific. And he said, how are you? And I said, oh, I'm wonderful. And I'm so damn sick, I don't know if I should puke or what. But anyhow, and he said to me, he said, you know, Bob, I haven't had a drink in 2 years. He said, in fact, I'm celebrating my second anniversary in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, wait a minute, Alcoholics Anonymous. It seems to me that there were some pamphlets that came to my home that said something about Alcoholics Anonymous. And my dear wife had called Central Office and told him about this horrible husband that she has, and she wanted to know if there was something they could possibly do for this guy. And they very kindly said to her, ma'am, we don't intercede, but we will help. If he will call us, there's help here for him. In the interim, we have a couple of pamphlets that we will mail out to you, and maybe he'll read them and identify with them. Well, I found them sitting on the john. And I found them, yeah, I carried a brown bag, and there was one in the brown bag. And I read them, and I said, Name, they weren't written for me. No way. Well, when he mentioned Alcoholics Anonymous, he hit me right between the eyes, because I then realized what those pamphlets were about that I had read, that there is an organization for people like myself. So I said to him, what is it you do at these meetings? And he said, Bob, I go to La Mesa Men's. And she said, we have a book. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous. It's called The Big Book. And we read from that, and we garner all the information we need to help us deal with the problems that we had, primarily alcoholism. But it has the answers for a number of things. And I said, boy, this must be one hell of a book. And I said, Bob, I'll see you. And I said, oh, by the way, where does this La Mesa Men's meeting that you talked about meet? And he says, well, in La Mesa, of course. And I said, well, hell, I knew that. But whereabouts? And it's about less than a mile from my house. And I thought, well, you know, I'm on Shank's ponies. I don't have a car, you know. I have a house and furniture and a job, but I don't have a car. Can't afford a car. You can't drink and afford a car. So, anyhow, that was on a Monday. I didn't drink Tuesday. I didn't drink Wednesday. I didn't drink Thursday. And Friday evening, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. Shortly that night, I met Bob. I went home and I called these three guys that used to go out looking for me. And I said, guess what? I think that I'm going to join Alcoholics Anonymous. And the first guy said, it's the best thing you could do. Damn it, I'm damn sick and tired of chasing after you. The second guy, I told him, and I said, I heard there's an organization called Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think I'm going to go there and see what it's all about. And he says, you damn well better go and see what it's all about, because you sure as hell need it. And I thought, geez, I'm not doing so good here. So I called the third guy, and he said, Bob, I hate to tell you this, but he said, I know the road you're going down. He said, it's in my family, and it destroys everything. Please go. Please. Please go. Well, on Friday night, I left my home, and I started walking to the Mesa Men's Meeting. And there are, in the old days, there was a nursery on La Mesa Boulevard. And it had three beautiful palm trees. So I walked up to the first palm tree, and I said, no, I'm not going. And I walked around that palm tree, and I couldn't break the circle. I went to the second palm tree, and I said, I can't do this. This is not for me. And I couldn't break the circle. I went to the third palm tree, and the same thing. But this time, something said, go. Go. And I went. And I walked up to the door, and the guy at the door stuck out his hand, and he says, welcome, you're in the right place. And I thought, how the hell does he know I'm in the right place? So that was my... And I'm sitting there in a meeting. I go in, and there's about 25 guys there. You know, they weren't falling all over me. I went in, sat down, and they said, hi. And I said, hi. And all of a sudden, somebody taps me on the shoulder, and I turn around, and here's this Bob. And he said, he whispered in my ear, I'm so glad you're here. And he was my sponsor for 39 years, till he died. So I got a little cheat sheet here, if you don't mind. God didn't write it, I wrote it. I want to tell you that I told you I've been around here for 60 years with 9 bad months, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about that, why I had 9 bad months too, but we'll get down the road here. In 1947, I was brand new in this fellowship, and Bill Wilson was going through the West Coast, and they were trying to promote, it had been written, the book had been written, The 12 Traditions, but it hadn't been accepted yet. And he was going around making a tour of the United States, and he happened to be on the West Coast. He came to San Diego, and I'm only in this program a very short period of time, maybe 3 months, maybe a little longer. And I had the great opportunity of meeting Bill Wilson. And he's a big, tall, slim guy, and he shook hands with me, and he said, your name is? And I said, Bob. And he said, I'm Bill Wilson. And he broke his anonymity. And I thought, Bill Wilson? Who the hell is Bill Wilson? And, so we're on our way home after the meeting, and Bob, my sponsor, says, you just met one of the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, the hell I did. And, of course, you know, I wasn't that far into the program. I wasn't as knowledgeable as I am now about what took place way back then. So that was a great experience for me. Now, the second great experience I had was, it's somewhere in the 60s. And a fella called and he said, Bob, there's an opportunity for about 20 of us to go have a meeting at Scripps Hospital with Dr. Bob. And I said, wow. And Dr. Bob, being a man of science, he was dying of pancreatic, whatever you call it, and he came there for research purposes. So we had, he said, I don't want this meeting to last more than a half hour, but I want the opportunity to hear from each and every one of you here. So it was a very emotional meeting. And when we left, he shook hands with each of us, and he said the same thing to each of us. Don't louse it up. Don't louse it up. So anyhow, that was a couple of great experiences for me. And the third person I met, who was the first woman who ever sobered up in Alcoholics Anonymous, was Marty Mann. And I had the great privilege of teaching the summer school on alcoholism at the University of Utah on a few occasions. And the first time I was there, doing the employee assistance part of the alcoholism course. And I met Marty Mann for the first time. And she was an exciting woman, very vibrant. For a woman her age at the time, she was an excellent woman. And she said something that made real sense to me. She said, "I want you to know that this program is about plateaus. And as you go along, you reach certain plateaus. And you go from one plateau to the next, to the next, to the next." And I think what she was really talking about was the 12 steps. And that's so true. If you reflect back on where you have come from, you have experienced different plateaus as you go, and you're where you are now because of it. So she was an exciting woman to meet. The other person that I had the great pleasure of meeting was Jim Burwell. Anyone know Jim Burwell? Well, Jim Burwell is one of the first 100 guys and gals that put this program together. And he's the one that said, "Hey, enough of this nonsense, this God stuff. We're changing it to God as you understand Him. You got it? That's it." And that's why that's in the book that way. So he was a great guy. And now, 13 years have gone by, and I'm, you know, those guys drove me nuts. I wasn't home, the first year I was in this program. We're going out to the honor camp. We're going down to the city jail. We're going to Hygieia. We're going down to Vista Hills. And I said, "When the hell do you guys stay home?" And they said, "Hey, this is what we do. And it's going on today. We're all doing the same thing. Only we do it a little differently now from what we did it then." But anyhow, I came back after I had an opportunity to become one of the youngest vice presidents of the International Union. And I went to this international convention in Atlantic City. And my wife and I were having some problems about this because she had a taste of the labor movement and she didn't like it. Because I'm not going to get into detail about it, but it just didn't fit. And she told me, I'll beg you not to take that job. I'm pleading with you. And I said, "Well, okay, there goes a hell of a good career down the road." And I go to this international meeting, and I go before the executive board, and I tell them I have to decline this opportunity because I'm having problems with my family, and blah, blah, blah. So now I got a hell of a good resentment. Man, I've got a beauty. And this guy says to me, "Is this gin? If it is, you can have it back." This guy that I'm with says, "Hey, Bob, we're going to a place tonight where Frank Sinatra got his start. And he comes back there frequently. So we're going to go and see Frank Sinatra maybe. Maybe he'll show up. Excuse me. This is on you." So we go to this bar, and the bar, and hey, we're all gussied up. We look like real big shots, you know. We're looking great. And, of course, we're all on an expense account, and that makes you look a hell of a lot greater. So, anyhow, the bartender comes by, and he says, "What do you boys have?" And my friend says, "I'll have some bourbon and water." And I looked at him, and I said, "Harold, you can't have bourbon and water. There's no place in that book that says you can have drink bourbon and water after you've been in this program for 5 years. That's the truth. This guy had 5 years of sobriety, but he had broke his sobriety about a year before we went to this convention, and I didn't know it. So he has his bourbon and water, and I told the bartender I'll have a Coke, and he says, comes around the second time, and he said, "Buddy, what do you have?" And I said, "Just put a little bit of bourbon in there. A little bit." Well, I tell you, he put a little bit of bourbon in there, and a half hour later, I'm the same asshole I was before. Just right back to where I'd been 13 years ago. And I was just as crazy. And fortunately, that only lasted a week. I did some relatively good drinking, but it only lasted a week. So I come back to the Friday night meeting. My sponsor says to me, "Okay, Bob, you're going to go back to the meeting on Friday night and you're going to tell them exactly what happened to you. And don't you goddamn leave out one bit of it." And I thought, "Jesus, I can't do that." But I did. I went back and I told these guys what happened to me. And after the meeting, Jim Burwell walked up to me, put his hands on my shoulders and looked me square in the eye, and he said, "Bob, you are one horrible example for Alcoholics Anonymous." Yeah, I was. So it's been a great journey. Well, you know, usually with a labor movement, you get one shot at a good job and that's it. And fortunately, I got another shot at another job. And I got the opportunity to become the AFL-CIO Director of Community Service for the 11 Western States. And I traveled a lot. And I was very cautious about who I ran with, what I did. I didn't go to the, what they call them, rump meetings in the labor unions. The meeting after the meeting, the rump meeting. And that's where they go and talk about all the great things they did. Boy, I got these guys, my guys didn't get put out in the street because, boy, we came to this great agreement. And these guys are all patting themselves on the back, you know, how great they are. And I didn't want to listen to that crap. So I'd leave. Well, I had to go to Seattle to save a guy's job. This guy thought he was the Don Juan of the office that he was in. And he had some serious problems. And they were ready to, fire him. So I went up there and I spoke with the executive board of the United Way, and I convinced them that this guy ought to have another shot, and he got it. And I came back, and I was beat. And I went to this reception for all the leadership of United Way for whatever campaign that was. And I was really tired. Don't get too angry, too hungry, or too whatever it is. And I should have known better. I go, and I'm frustrated and tired, and this cute little cocktail waitress walks by and with the little shorts givies, and she's got this delicious drink, and she says, "Cocktail?" And I said, "Why not? What the hell?" You know, now that's the insanity of alcoholism. That's the insanity. Here's a guy that should damn well know better. It's not going to resolve any of my problems. And so that was that. But that was quite a thing, and I had the worst time of my life during that period of time. I was hiding. I didn't want you to know that I'm drinking, and that's the toughest way to go at it. And eventually, I would go to meetings, and I couldn't get it. And I'd walk out. I'd say, "They don't know what the hell they're talking about. I know more than they know." And so that's the situation I got myself in. So this is my second sponsor said to me, "Bob, it's time for us to go to the Malibu Retreat House again." We went every year. And this is old story to a lot of you, but it's my story. I have to tell it. So we go to the Malibu Retreat House, and I have been struggling to get back into this fellowship. And I get in my room, and I get down on my knees, and I pray to this God of my understanding, "I need help. I can't get back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't do it. And let me tell you, just like that, I experience something that I cannot explain to you. Absolutely cannot explain it to you. I got up off my knees. I went down to the chapel. I said some formal prayers. I went back up to my sponsor's room and I said, Jack, you know, I really think I found out why I have relapsed twice. And he said, really? And I said, really? And I had, when I did my inventory, there was one thing I did not put in it, and I did not deal with it. It's going to go to my grave, and that's it. But when I got up off my knees, and I realized that I could rid myself of this incident that took place, and I went and I said, Jack, you have to listen to me. And he did. That was 38 years ago. So I stand here tonight, you know, happy, joyous, and free. And it's been a great journey. I'm not being braggadocious, but I want you to know that in the 5 minutes I have left, or what? Yeah, come see, come saw. I had another great experience. This morning at my Saturday morning men's meeting, a guy said, I'm at the VA hospital in a 28-day treatment program. And when he said that, I lit up, man. I really lit up. Because when the VA hospital is going to be built, the doctor that was in charge, Dr. Camp, had built two other hospitals. And in that course of time, he had a labor liaison work with him to help him through the labor problems they had during the course of the construction. So this fellow that I was serving on a committee with said, I want you to meet Dr. Camp, and I think you're the guy he should have. So that's exactly what I became. I became the labor liaison to Dr. Camp when he built the hospital, and I probably saved him millions of dollars building it. But I asked him one favor. I said, Dr. Camp, I have to, I'm only going to ask one thing of you, and I hope you can do it. And I said, I hope that you will have a treatment facility in this hospital. And he said, Bob, you got it. 2 days before they had the grand opening, he called me up there and he said, you bring whoever you believe should be at the hospital. I want you to come up and I want to show you something. So I took some people close to me in AA and we went up there. And we walked in and I couldn't believe my eyes. Here was the treatment facility. And it's there today. And I don't know how many hundreds of men have gone through that treatment program that are sober today. So when that young fellow this morning said he'd been to the VA treatment program, I lit up. So anyhow, I had the good fortune of serving on a lot of committees. I served on the California State Advisory Board on alcoholism and the National Council on Alcoholism. And it's all because I was sober, not because I'm who I am. It was a fact that I could do that. And, it was a great honor because I felt, here's a guy that damn near came not from the gutter. I didn't exactly come from the gutter. But here's a guy that his life was all screwed up. And I finally got into this fellowship and kept growing and growing and getting more confident in myself, have more belief in myself. And, I just developed into a person I never dreamed I would be. And so I served on a lot of committees, and I really feel that I didn't do it, God did it. And I believe in God. I came here with a faith of my own persuasion, and I practice it today, but I'm not as good as I was, but I'm not as bad as I was, so I'm getting there. Anyhow, You know, that incident that took place up at Malibu Retreat House gave me a most spirituality I've ever had in my life. I found out the difference between religion and spirituality. And there is a great difference. And if you haven't discovered it, I hope you do. So anyhow, it's about time for me to say I do. I want to do one thing before I leave. And I don't know if I've really conveyed anything that would be of help to you, except I'm an example of what AA is really about. And Lisa, you should have had the 45 minutes. If you will remember, the second gentleman that spoke here was an electrician from Los Angeles. And when he closed the meeting, he closed it with a prayer. Now, I'm going to tell you the history of that prayer. I have it right here in my hand. I don't know if any of you in this room, there might be a few of you, that would remember a gentleman named Walter O'Keefe. Walter O'Keefe was a comedian, and he used to substitute for Jack Parr and Jack Benny and Steve Allen, and he was really a clever man. And I'm at this retreat in Malibu, and he gets up and he said, my name is Walter O'Keefe. And he had a lot of presence. He's fine, you know. And he said, I'm assuming that you know me. And hell, I don't know you. Who the hell are you? And he said, well, I'm going to tell you who I am. And he said, and then he went on, the litany of saints, you know, all this great stuff that he's been involved with. And he was a very interesting character. He had quite a career. And he said, you know, I went to the University of Notre Dame, and I'm really proud of that. And he said, while I was at the university, one of the fellows in my fraternity turned out to be a priest. And he said, he was assigned to Hawaii. And he had, as part of his assignment, going over to Molokai and to render his services to lepers. And so he went over there at the behest of his friend, and he put on his show for him, and they all clapped and roared, and he thought, man, this is the greatest thing that ever happened to me in my life. He said, to be here with these people and to bring some joy and laughter into their life was really great. So he said, you know, when it was all over, this little old lady walked up to me and she said, Mr. O'Keefe, I don't know how to thank you. I don't know how to thank you. And she says, here. Dear God, I have no idea where I'm going. I do not see the road ahead of me. I cannot know for certain where it will end. Nor do I really know myself. And the fact that I think that I am following your will does not mean that I am actually doing so. But I believe this. I believe the desire to please you does, in fact, please you. I hope I have that desire in everything I do. I hope I never do anything apart from that desire. And I know that if I do this, you will lead me by the right road through all I may not know about it at the time. Therefore, I will trust you always, for though I may seem to be lost and in the shadow of death, I will not be afraid, because I know that you will leave me to face, you will not leave me to face my troubles alone. Thanks a lot.